Welcome to the Student Athlete Preparation Podcast, brought to you by SimplyFaster.com, the industry's leading sports technology and coach education platform. Check out all their products and their coaching blog at SimplyFaster. That's SimplyFaster.com. Today, I get a chance to chop it up with one of my good friends and the assistant director of football sports performance for Boise State football, Lucas White.
Welcome to the Student Athlete Preparation Podcast, hosted by high school strength and conditioning coach Cody Hughes. This ain't your normal podcast, y'all. He's bringing real discussions about real strategies to improve the student athlete development and preparation process. New episodes every Friday with guests who are all about keeping it real. It'll warn you now. You might get your feelings hurt. The mics are on and the takes are hot. Enjoy this episode. Here's your host, Cody Hughes.
Luke, my brother, what's going on, man? How you doing?
What's going on, man? How you doing?
I'm good, man. Just living the dream, as usual, man. I appreciate you coming on the show, man. I know you guys are stupid busy up there in Boise.
Yeah, man. Glad we could finally make this work. I know we've been trying to get this done for the last probably, I don't know, almost like what, month and a half? 2 months.
No doubt.
You know what it is, man. Summer hits and we get rolling. You know how long those days are, but no, man, I'm glad we finally had a chance to sit down and chop it up and get this thing going.
Yeah, man. Awesome. And for you guys, I want you guys to understand that Lucas and I have a cool history. You know, I call him a close friend because he is, and that I want you guys to know when it comes to, I wanted to say this live because I think it's important for you to hear it and that for everybody to hear it, that there's only so many few real dudes, I think, in this world, period, but also in the industry. And Lucas is one of them. I was a young guy wanting to be a strength coach and got an opportunity to intern at Mississippi State. And Lucas was interning at Mississippi State the semester before. And just something as simple. I remember coming into my interview to interview with Ack, and y'all were in the, you know, in the conference room where the intern sat. And,
yep.
You know, you didn't have to go out of your way to introduce yourself, show me around, give me your phone number. And kind of told me, because I interviewed in January, but wasn't going to intern because that's when you guys were interning in the springtime, winter. And I was coming in the summer, and I would text you, and you didn't have to do all that, man. You've kind of prepared me for that opportunity. And that was big for me. And we've been friends ever since, man. It's just been that way. And we talk a lot, you know, me and him. When I say he's not just a good coach in the industry, he's a good friend. So, man, I just appreciate you for being who you are.
Absolutely. And that was, you know, that's a cool story, you know, because that was, I just kind of, when I got into college, I just kind of jumped in, and that was, you know, something I said, you know, if I have a chance to, you know, help other people kind of navigate the waters a little more effectively than I did when I first got in, so, you know, any chance you get, you know, you should do that. So, but yeah, man, I'm glad this, you know, led to the relationship we've got now. And again, close friend in the field, really good dude in the field. And yeah, man, we always chop it up. Now it's time to put it on some tape, man.
Yeah, good deal. Well, tell us a little bit about Lucas's journey, because here's a cool thing about Lucas is that, man, you started as a high school strength coach, right?
Yeah.
And now he's at the college setting. He's bounced around a lot of places. So give us the quick synopsis of where all you've been and maybe a nugget or two of something you thought was important you took from each place.
Yeah, sure enough. So I started out as a high school strength coach at Evansville, FJ Wright's High, where I went to high school and played ball at. Did that for about 3 years. Then went down to Mississippi State in January of 2016 as an intern, was there for 6 months. Then ran out to New Mexico State University for 2 years, from 2016 to about July of 2018, I believe. Then from there, I had an opportunity to go out to Indiana State, go back to the homeland and get my grad work done. And I think I made it there probably about 8-9 months, somewhere around that ballpark. And then I got the opportunity to head out to San Jose State, was there for just under 2 years, and just got out of here to Boise in January with the whole new staff. So it's been a fun ride, but, you know, kind of looking back on it, you know, things like I could take away from, you know, my time as a high school guy, looking back on it now, I needed to get way better. I was so green in the field and I didn't even know it. You know, but I had a lot of fun. And I think the biggest takeaway from there though, was that, you know, I didn't know where, you know, the coaching was going to take me, but I knew that this is something that I love to do. And I know there's a greater level I can take this to, at least at the time that was my thought process. I knew, hey, I would like to go, you know, take this to the college level at some point. But the biggest thing through high school was one to know that I needed to get way better. I didn't really have much of a clue what I was doing. I knew enough to make it work.
Yeah.
But secondly, that was where I said, this is exactly what I want to do with my life. And lo and behold, I didn't know the next, you know, several years throughout my 20s, you know, what kind of journey that was going to be. But that's where the love of it really started. You know, I was down at Mississippi State. I think that was the biggest thing I took away from that was like, okay, this is what you want to do for the rest of your life. Like, you know, this is going to be the normal day in, day out. And what an awesome staff to start my college journey with Coach Savage.
No doubt.
Jack Berger, Coach Peoples, shout my man, Nate. You know, Coach Riley Allen and Coach Ryan Phyllis. I mean, what a great staff to start with. I've got a lot of respect for those guys. They've all helped me in one way or other, you know, get to where I'm at now. Really appreciative of those guys. But really, too, what I took away from there was how to be organized and how to bring good juice, how to bring some good energy to the room. You know, what kind of atmosphere that needs to be, you know, within the college setting. But and then going out to New Mexico State, man, Coach Decker, a guy I cut my teeth with and has had a massive influence on me in my career. Learned a lot of good tools from Deck, but biggest thing is, you know, I learned from him was, you know, be organized. Here's how you coach on the floor. Here's how you coach on the field. And that the standard is what the standard is. And the moment you let that thing slip, it becomes obsolete. And got a lot of respect for Coach Decker, you know, Coach Akeem Robinson, Derek Leger, Zach Witherspoon, all the guys in New Mexico State, had a great experience there. And then, got a chance, you know, when I was at Indiana State as a GA. And I think that was a fun period of time because I got a chance to go back home a little bit. I'm 2 hours from Evansville. It felt good to be back in the Midwest. But, you know, Coach McManus gave me a great opportunity to have a lot of responsibility. And at that point in time, I was chomping at the bit to, you know, to get out of the, okay, well, we've been to Mississippi State, been to New Mexico State. You've gotten all these good tools as far as organization, planning, you know, how to coach on the floor, how to run, you know, a session on the field, all the ins and outs that you need to have, and the tools that you need to have to be proficient, and having a chance to have a lot of responsibility and put that into practice there, proved to myself, okay, like I'm built for it. You know, this is I made the right decision. I'm on the right track. And then, you know, getting out to San Jose State, you know, taking away from there, what an awesome 2 years. I mean, going out to California, I had a really good time there. You know, we was able to form some awesome relationships with the kids I coached. And just, you know, from there, it was more so, you know, biggest takeaway I got from that was, dealing with adversity, especially with what COVID really was.
Yeah.
What a 2 years, and especially what a last, you know, 8-9 months, you know, 10 months to a year, trying to play college football season in the midst of a global pandemic.
And then winning a conference championship on top of it.
Yeah, no doubt, man. And what a really cool story of resilience and resolve, you know, from my time there and was able to take a lot that, you know, as long as you've got a plan and you stick to it, man, like, you know, all the outside noise, no big deal, stick to it. You know, you'll have some success. You know, getting here at Boise State, the biggest thing I've taken away from here is that, you know, there's a reason why this has been, you know, this program has been such a dominant presence over the last 25 years of college football. There's a reason why this program is what it is. And so for me right now, it feels like a massive responsibility, you know, to carry that on and keep rolling, but really excited to be surrounded by some great men, great women in the program too, you know, from our staff, our ops department, our strength staff, sports medicine, just people around the program in the city of Boise. This community is awesome. And so that's the big takeaway from here. But yeah, man, been able to take those, you know, take some things away from, you know, all the stops I've been at. But yeah, man, that's the story. That's a couple of things I've taken away, and that's how I've gotten where I've gotten to now. So,
man, what a wild journey, you know. Like, yeah. It's not the faint of heart for those of you that maybe have been in one spot for a while or a high school strength coach listening to this, that, you know, if you don't understand the grind of the toll it takes when you move the way you did. I mean, goodness gracious, you've been Mississippi, Indiana, New Mexico, Idaho. You've been across the country, man. You know, I did it twice. I went Louisiana, Colorado, back to Alabama, and I'm like, I'm done with that stuff, man. Like, it can be exhausting, you know.
You did it with a family. I just did it with a car full of my stuff, man. I packed a lot of air mattresses in the back, able to rotate those things out every week.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, no, it takes a toll, but I mean, it's been awesome. And, you know, I think, you know, especially going out to California, you know, moving around and all that. You know, I met my girlfriend out there, and you know, she's moved out to Boise with me too, and things are going well. So
it's a big deal.
If I hadn't, put all those into play, man, like probably would have never met.
That's right, man.
Two people never crossed paths. So, you know, there's a silver lining everywhere you go. And I know the moving is, it's part of it. It's the name of the game, but it makes for a cool life at the end of the day. And that's been the fun part is, you know, throughout this whole journey, it's basically come from just this, you know, relentless pursuit of strength. And, you know, I've been able to build my life around that pursuit and my passion of strength, and everything good that's going on right now is a direct result of that. So I have no complaints.
Awesome. Zero. Love it, man. What a great perspective. You know, the thing about Lucas is not, I mean, he's been a lot of places, but it's for a good reason. He's a solid coach, and we're going to dive into some training here and really talk about what some things that you've noticed over your career. And one of the pivotal moments to me where you changed, in my opinion, this is just from me observing from our talks from over the years of what, you know, your philosophy is. Talk to me about when you went to California. Because and you made this realization that you, and I think you started doing this at Indiana State when you started training at Thirst, where you started, hey, I need to get out of my own weight room and maybe train in another spot. Yeah. So we'll talk about that first, and then how you got to San Jose and got to train at Boss Barbell with Dan freaking Green.
Yeah.
You know, like some world record holder. So walk me through your personal lifting experience and how that changed your perspective as a coach.
Yeah, man. So I'll rewind this, you know, further back from you know, before I even went to California, before I even got into coaching. I was probably about 11 years old, and I've told this story a couple of times on some other podcasts and whatnot. But you know, I'm rolling around, and all the like a lot of the guys that I made friends with when we got in middle school and up into high school were all pretty yoked up. Well, a lot of them wrestled, and I remember looking at a couple of these dudes, like we were in like sixth or seventh grade. I'm like, man, these dudes are kind of yoked up. Like that'd be pretty cool. You know? So I remember asking a couple of them, hey, what do you know? I know you guys wrestle. I know you play ball. What else do you do? And a bunch of like, dude, like, you know, we'll go lift with our dads in the garage. And I'm like, oh, that's sick. So I started looking in my basement, and we had this old, I don't even know the brand name, but I think my mom got it from like Sears or something. And it had a row, a pull down. It had an extension, a leg curl.
A Bowflex contraption type thing.
Yeah, kind of Bowflex. And then we had these old cement dumbbells that were coated in plastic that cracked about every time you picked them off the ground. And then we had a small squat stand. It looked like a dresser or something. This kind of looked like with little hooks. It was bad, man. And then we had this little bitty bar. I bet it weighed maybe 15, 20 pounds, weighed probably about 100 pounds in weight. And I would go down there when I was about 11, 12 years old, and I had zero clue what I'm doing, but I'd throw a CD that I burned on the desktop in a Walkman, try to age it a little bit.
Yeah.
And I would just go down there and toil away. And I had no idea what I was doing, but I knew it was something like, this is a lot of fun. And so that's really what got training going. And then when I got into high school, I was a decent high school athlete. I'm not going to sit here and say I was a world beater, no, but played football, ran track, had a lot of fun doing that. But the weight room was where I really found a lot of joy, and I found something that I was good at, you know, because a lot of their guys I was with really good at football, really good at baseball, really good at wrestling. And I was decent, all those, but you know, I think the weight room was the one thing that I found, okay, this is my niche. This is where I'm good at. And this is something that I excel. And it gave me a lot of confidence. And so fast forward, you're going right. You lived all through, you know, all through high school, you get into college, and then you start trying to figure out, I have no idea where my life is going to go. And we've all hit that point, right? Where it seems like, okay, there's a lot of inconsistency around you. And at the time there was a lot around me, like, you know, whether you broke up with, you know, girlfriend, relationship ended, parents got divorced, you know, friends moved on, whatever the case is, there's just a lot of stuff that was going on. And you know, that everyone deals with, right? But everyone kind of copes with it in different ways. And for me, the weight room was the big way to cope with, you know, the stresses of going through college and trying to get all that done and everything. You know, you're trying to find yourself, you know, and kind of where your purpose is at when you're in your early to mid 20s, excuse me. You know, that was a place where I really could find myself. And that added a consistent part to my life when everything else is very inconsistent. So, and that's where I really started, you know, to latch on to training and whether it was bench, squat, deadlift, if I was into weightlifting, if I was, you know, early days back into bodybuilding, just trying to get as yoked as possible, it didn't matter. I was always happy to be in a weight room, and I was always happy and glad and at peace when I was training. And that's still true. I'm 32 now, And that's still the case. But then, so once I got that done and, you know, I went through that period of my life and then, okay, I started to find coaching. And when I really started to get into weightlifting, I wasn't the greatest at it. that comes no surprise to anyone, but it was something I figured I may as well need to have a working knowledge of this. Right. So I spent those 3 years at Rides High School. And then I get out to, you know, go to Mississippi, I go to New Mexico and all those places. I was very fortunate to be able to train in some excellent facilities. I mean, you've been aware of Mississippi State, you know what that is, right? We had every tool under the sun. New Mexico State, awesome facility too, 24 racks and platforms, a lot of space, a lot of cool stuff to play with. But when I got to Terre Haute, and we had just built, NES State just built that weight room. I think it was 2 years old, maybe doing some change. I'm not sure. But whenever I got there and I was training, I'm like, man, I'm just doing a lot of the same stuff. It's, you know, a lot of the linear stuff, a lot of the block stuff. And I was still, you know, decently strong, but my body was starting to break down a bit. It wasn't feeling the greatest. Progress started to stall. And you can, you know, attribute that to several different things, right? It could be school, work, like outside factors, all sorts of stuff. But the main thing was like, I was doing a lot of the same stuff, you know, for a long period of time. And I had dabbled like with some different, you know, like APRE, some, you know, 3D undulating models, you know, some 4-day, you know, upper lower strength power type deal, like whatever. You know, but at the end of the day, it was just, everything was kind of stagnant. Everything was kind of stale. And so I get to Terre Haute and my buddy, Tyler Crooks, who's a chiropractor up in Indianapolis. He had told me, hey, if you get a chance to, you know, to go to this gym called Thirst, you should go do that. I can get you in touch with the owner, Brandon Smitley. And I'm kind of like, well, that's an odd name for a gym. And I go find out it's Terre Haute Intensity Resistance and Sports Training. I'm like, okay, that's really clever.
Yeah.
And so, I hadn't heard about it. And then I get to ISU and I'm going through all these classes. And I, you know, met a couple of guys that would always come in rocking like Thirst t-shirts. They'd have Elite FTS gear on. I'm like, oh, these dudes probably go there. So I hit a couple of them up and they're like, yeah, man, we train at Thirst. You should totally come over and train one night. And so we had and I reached out to Brandon too, a little bit. My buddy Tyler had gotten us in contact. And so I reach out to Brandon and he's like, hey, come on whenever you want. We'd love to have you. All right, cool. And so there was one Friday or one weekend we had a bye week. And we had nothing going on. We had Friday, Saturday, Sunday off. I'm like, all right, cool. So I go there on a Friday night and we were squatting. And I think the most I had done before that, like, I feel like I can, you know, 495, 500. On my worst day, I should be able to hit that no problem raw. Well, I walked up in there and hit 515 and had some room to go. And I was like, man, this is a really cool atmosphere. There's some really cool equipment here. There's some really neat people. And there's a guy here who's a world record holder in the squat, is partnered with a major brand that everyone in our field knows in Elite FTS. And so that kind of got the wheel spinning of, this is going to be a really good place to not only take my lifting to the next level, but also my coaching, my planning, my organization to the next level.
Yeah.
And it's going to expose me to a different side of the coin that I hadn't really had much of a chance to dabble in yet. And that would be, you know, the conjugate system, right?
Yep.
So, and we'll get to that here after a while, I'm sure. But
yeah,
so I go to Thirst and training just takes off. I'm enjoying it again. I'm having a lot of fun. I'm meeting other people outside of the weight room. And that made my experience. One of the things that made my experiences at Terre Haute and at Indiana State so awesome was that for the first time I was able to really connect with a community outside of the weight room that I found myself working in. And what that did for me, not only professionally, but personally, was massive.
Wow.
Absolutely huge. And again, it took a little bit to kind of get out of my comfort zone because, like, you're in the weight room all day long, right? And if someone wants to know about strength or, you know, whatever's going on, like, you know, they're going to go, like, when I was at Indiana State, they would come to me or Coach Stein, Coach McManus, Coach Martuccio, they would come to all of us, right? But when I'm out of the place like that, I mean, I was the only college strength coach in there and wasn't the strongest dude in that place. And we had guys that would just, you know, hold down regular day jobs that would come in and rip 650, 700 pounds off the deck on a deadlift. You had a guy in there that owned it. Yeah, it was gnarly. And you had a guy in there, Brandon Smilly. He squatted 567 at 132 body weight. That's
good Lord.
That is dumb.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, okay, I can gain a lot from this and this is going to be a good experience. And I'm glad I did that. But then when I got to California, you know, I was training at San Jose State's weight room for a while. And, you know, was able to get a lot of good stuff done. But then when I found out how close Mark Bell's gym was up at Super Training, I would go up to ST on Saturdays. And, man, what an experience. What an awesome place to go. And it was really cool to meet Mark and his brother Chris. And, two people that have had a massive influence on the strength game. And that, well, what a good time. But then I'm looking around and I realized how close Boss Barbell was, because we're like, well, we're going to be in season, we're going to be traveling for games, I'm not going to be able to get away on Saturdays. So what can I do to keep this ball rolling? And lo and behold, I found out Boss Barbell is 25 minutes from campus. Blew my mind. And I'm like, oh, that's Dan Green's gym. And I remember growing up, man, we were in college. We'd go to the Arnold and we would watch Dan, you know, do exhibitions when he was with Animal.
Yeah.
And I just, some of the gnarliest feats of strength, pressing, squatting, deadlift, whatever. I mean, the guy's just a dude in the weight room. And so when I had a chance to go to Boss Barbell and train there, I would be an idiot if I didn't do this. And I remember the first day I walked in there, man, like everyone's in there squatting raw, like they're all raw lifters. No one was in gear. Nobody. I rolled up in there with a pair of squat briefs that are well over broken in. And I've got chains on the bar. I've got plates. I'm pretty sure like I took all these like mats that were used for deadlift, used for block pulls, and I cranked them all the way up. And we actually had a box squat box. And I remember I hit like, it was like five some odd and like 160 pound chain on a Buffalo bar. And Dan came up and said, hey, by the way, you know, we've got a box where you can actually use, those are deadlift mats. I was like, oh, okay, cool. Whatever. but no, man, like to kind of cap that though, like training at Boss was so awesome, because it, you know, when you're working in a place and you're somewhere all day long and you have an opportunity to get out and go do something you enjoy and train and be around other people. It was like, okay, cool. Leaving work. Everything for the day is taken, you know, everything's taken care of, you know, the kids are taken care of. You're ready to go for the next day. You had a really good day training. It's been an awesome day. Now it's coach's time to go have some fun.
Yeah.
And that was a chance to kind of get out, drive 20 minutes up Mountain View, and train there. And it was so awesome because, you know, I talked about with Thirst, the community that was there was unlike any other. And then I get to Boss Barbell, and same thing with Super Train. The communities there were awesome.
Yeah.
Absolutely awesome. And you could walk into Boss any given time and you'd have four or five people that were or still are current record holders in the sport of powerlifting. And how often do you have an opportunity to not only be in the presence of one of the strongest people, you know, one of the strongest, you know, humans to walk the earth, but we had multiple there.
Yeah.
So you're going to tell me that as a strength and conditioning coach that I can't get something from them, whether it's, you know, directly through having a conversation or indirect from watching them train and train alongside. I mean, you'd be a fool to say you couldn't.
Right.
Because you're around them, man, like the strength, it rubs off on you. You can't be in that place and not get something out of it if you're around those people. You just can't.
So what did it do for your mentality? Because, like, you can't be soft and train like those dudes. You know what I mean? Like, you can't be soft and train with world record holders that are doing things that, I mean, quite honestly, are not the most healthiest thing in the world. You know, but at the end of the day, like, everybody, we've talked about this personally. Like, if you don't want to, if you don't want to fly close to the sun, just stay in your room and stay on the bench and just, you know, never get in your car. Just do that. You know, don't risk your life. But what did it do training around both those people with Thirst and Boss do for your just mentality overall of how you live your life and how you attack coaching and everything and above?
Man, that's an excellent question. Try to figure out how to articulate this the best I can to make it make some sense. But so I remember walking in, there was one night we were in there and this is at Boss. And I don't know if you're familiar with Andrew Herbert, but the guy, one of the last meets, I think he squatted, it was at Record Breakers, November of 2019. I think he squatted 942 and a half in reps. And a belt.
Okay.
And so I roll up in there, and there was one night I remember this. So I would bench on Mondays and everyone else would squat on Mondays, right? So we roll in and Herbie's like, yeah, you know, we're working up to some, you know, I'm gonna go like 902 or 903 something as we're working. So I'm like, all right. And he's just taking his time and we're rolling. And finally we get up to the top set of the night. It was like 902 or 903 or something like that. I can't remember. Something stupid. And I remember we had a guy in the monolift and we had two spotters on the sides. I was on one of the sides. We had a guy in the back. And I remember looking over my buddy Joe Park and I was like, hey, how many? And I think he's going to go, you know, one. He goes, three. And I was like, oh, no. Okay. Okay, here we go. And I look at my buddy Robbie. He's sitting next to me. I was like, he's like, you just got one. I was like, no, he's got a triple. And we both gave this look like, oh man, we better lock in because this could get pretty hairy.
Yeah.
And he hammered the first rep solid, hit the second one. And I'm thinking, there's no way this dude's going for a third. And lo and behold, he took it to the deck and we had to pull him out, but he went for it. And I remember asking him, I was like, man, that was gutty, dude. Like, that was pretty gnarly. And he's like, hey, what's the worst that could happen? You know, I've got all my friends around me. I've got the crew, the atmosphere's here, go for it. So what's the worst that happens? I miss and you pull me out and we're all good. And so what that did mainly that night and that experience overall, what that did for my mentality was, what's the worst that could happen? Just go. Do not ever be afraid to go get some, because you've got the safety. If you've been a good dude, you've taken care of people and you've treated people the right way, and you've made sure that everyone that's under your responsibility is taken care of, that will come back. That will be reciprocated back to you tenfold. So what's the worst that could happen? Just put your head down, take a shot of ammonia, you've got to hit one, and just go.
That's such just a go. Great point, you know, and too often we live in fear, and you hear the old cliche of, you know, a lot of people live scared to die, and when they're on their deathbed, wonder why they never lived. You know, like you hear things like that. And when you hear somebody like that, just not being scared to fail, you know, that's such a big deal. And that's the same thing with you making the jump. Like, I mean, who knows? You could have been a high school coach the rest of your life. And there's not a knock on high school coach. Obviously, I'm a high school coach, but you wanted to say what if, and that's scary. You moved to Starkville in the middle of nowhere, Mississippi.
Yeah.
With nobody you knew, and said, we're going to do this thing. You know, like, I'm going to do it. I'm going to go work for free because I want the shot. And that just completely just emulates who you are. You know what I mean? And I think that's awesome. And shifting that, you know, from just the mentality and who you are as a person and diving into the conjugate system or the conjugate way of training. And we both know this word gets bastardized, doesn't it? Like, it gets thrown away. It's almost become watered down. You know, is conjugate West Side? Is West Side conjugate? I don't know. Is it? Yes. No. I mean, who knows? A lot of people say yes. A lot of people say no. I think you're going to look at me and go, no, it's not. but you've developed this system of thinking. I think it's not a program, right? It's a systems way of thinking with principles that you've developed over time and taken from some principles from the powerlifting world into sports performance. And this is where probably where the golden nuggets are going to happen. And I want to let's just chop this thing up on where this came from, when you decided to go for it, you know, when you said, hey, I'm gonna do it this way and see what happens, where you got it from, and then like how that's continued to show results is in helping athletes develop in this way. I mean, and if people don't know what conjugate means, man, I want you to define it for us since it's so watered down these days.
Yeah, man, conjugate, if you look it up in Webster's Dictionary, it's connected, coupled, or related. That's what it is. Yeah. And so when you look at this, everyone talks about conjugate system, this conjugate, that. And otherwise, if you want to talk like some dude, like, you know, a coach that has this thing down, man, Brett Youth, whoa. You can talk about a dude that.
Yeah, at IUW. Is that right? Yeah. Incarnate Word. Yes. UIW. Awesome. Sorry, awesome. I screwed that up. Yeah. Incarnate Word down in San Antonio. Yeah. Got it.
Awesome. Awesome guy. Awesome guy. Awesome coach. Really good resource. But when you look at it, really, it's a concurrent model of training, right? So you're trying to train. You look at max effort, dynamic effort, repetition effort, all that. You know, and then that carries on the field. And you look at max excel, max velocity. You work a change of direction, some angular work, whatever. You're able to train multiple qualities within a week, right? When you look at a concurrent model. Conjugate is the style of rotation that you use with your main lifts.
Got it.
Where if you're on your dynamic days, if you want to rotate that out every 3 weeks, absolutely go for it. But that's essentially what it looks like. It's a concurrent system of training with conjugate style rotation of main lifts. If that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. So when did you marry these two ideas? I mean, I don't know. Marry may not be the right word, but just combine these two ideas. Where did you run this? Like, when you go, all right, I'm going to run it with this team at this moment in your career. And what happened?
Yeah, so biggest thing, and that was one of the big reasons why I went to Thirst, right, was I heard about it. You know, we're all familiar with West Side, right? I mean, there's a strength coach that is, you know, in America right now and has never heard West Side Barbell. I mean,
they're not a strength coach.
I would be shocked. And so knowing that Brandon Smitley that's his deal. He's a big, big conjugate guy. He knows that system in and out better than I do. And, that was one thing that I talked to him about, and I was like, hey man, like, you know, if I want to run this myself, just to get a feel for it, like, how would I do this? And so we started going, here's like max effort days. Here's, you know, dynamic effort days. Here's your rep work. Okay. All right, great. And so I got to think, I'm like, okay, how could, if I was going to run this with, and I heard several coaches run this with, you know, certain teams, whether it be football, baseball, basketball, soccer, whatever. But my thought was, if I want to run this as a, you know, with a team, how would I go about doing it? Because the biggest thing I saw, my lift started to go, started to trend upwards, bench, squat, deadlift started to trend upwards. But the biggest thing, biggest two things, one, I was enjoying training more, but even more so, I was healthy.
Okay.
I had zero issues going on. And I couldn't really say it a whole lot, you know, for some of the other systems I tried to run myself. So when I started talking to Brandon about it, I was like, you know, how would you structure a max effort day? How would you structure a dynamic day? How would you fit your rep work in? Right. And then the Westside Text lays it out. I'm one of the guys more so that I learn better by chopping it up and talking to people, you know, like read something about, all right, cool. Now let me talk to someone who knows something better than I do and have, and someone has a better grasp, and that gives me a better idea. Okay, here's how I would go about this if this is something I really want to do. So I got talking to Brandon about it, and I was, okay, this all makes a lot of sense. And so when I got to, when I was at Indiana State and we got ready to go for the spring semester in January, you know, I had taken over women's soccer. I said, okay, I'm gonna give this a shot. I think I have a good grasp on it. I think I can organize a plan that would be in the best interest of the team I'm with. And let's see what happens. You know, let's see what we get. And that was one of the gnarlier off seasons winter periods I think I've had with the team. And you know, we looked at, you know, a number of girls got stronger. You know, the injuries in through spring ball or through spring period went down drastically, talking to sports med. And that was kind of something that Nate Harvey talked about a lot in Conjugate U. And you know, he was looking, the kids are getting stronger, but the instance of injury is starting to go down. And if someone does have something happen, maybe they're not out as long. Maybe they're only out like a week. We can have 2 weeks instead of, you know, 3 weeks to a month. And that's when you look at a competitive season, man, that's a substantial amount of time. Or if you're in a spring period and you've got someone that's trying to fight for a spot, well, if you're not on the field, like you're watching from the sideline, you're not taking anyone's spot, man.
Right.
You know what I mean? So that was really when I had a chance to really go through, and I wrote an article on it. It's on Elite FTS. If anyone wants to check it out, it's on there. But for me, it was more so, this is going to be a test run for myself as a coach to see how the organization goes, what I liked about it, what I would change, and not necessarily what I didn't like, but what I would change for next time. And then other considerations as far as, you know, how you effectively organize and track, you know, top fives, top threes, top singles, if you're doing doubles. You know, how do you track your dynamic days, wherever the case is, and how do you fit your rep effort in, you know? So I kind of covered all that in my article, but, you know, again, what I liked, what I would change, you know, and some other considerations, but that's really where it started. That's really where it started. And then when I got to San Jose State, you know, I had a chance to hone in even better. You work with men's soccer, women's soccer, you know, and then with track and field and finding ways to, okay, you know, with track and field, right? We did cleans, we did jerks, we did snatches. Mm-hmm. Finding ways to incorporate the Olympic lifts within the system that I feel is effective. And then taking, you know, things I learned from Coach Decker, things I learned from Coach Savage, from Coach Peoples, and things I learned at Indiana State from Coach McManus, Coach Stein, right?
Right.
Trying to take things that I thought were very effective and that had a lot of value within the collegiate setting, like, you know, like looking at, you know, our like the prehab system we had at NMSU, right? With the barbell row, with the weighted chin, with, you know, the single leg RDL test and the glute ham, like, you know, how do I fit those standards in to Matt to where it all complements the system I've chosen to run?
Yeah.
And then if you have, the more you understand, like, hey, here are the qualities we're trying to train on the max effort days. Here's what we're trying to get on the dynamic effort days. Then here's where you can get more repetition effort on, you know, you get more RE work, you know, on your dynamic effort days as opposed to your max effort days. If you understand how to, you'll organize that and plan it out. It's a really easy system to run, really easy. And then you can pick and choose from an auxiliary or a secondary press squat or pull or a clean or Olympic lift, whatever you want to run. And then within your, you know, your auxiliary movements, like your, you know, your dumbbell pressing, your single arm rows, your weighted chins, barbell rows, your, you know, single leg work, what have you, direct shoulder work, pre-hat, whatever, you can find a way. You can still keep those exercises in, but you can find a way to make it match with the principle. Know whether it's max, dynamic, or rep, you can find a way to make that match so that we still stay true to the principles of the system and you don't make it something that it's not.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, you know, it's interesting because your way of implementing is not going to be the same way if I ask that same question to another coach.
Absolutely not.
It's because your experiences are different, right? The way you've gone, the way you've seen success is different. And I think that's super important. And even, you know, I've even dabbled a little bit of this past off season with our football guys is, and we're going to talk about one variation here being the box squad. Right. Yeah. And then we want to lead that into talking about kind of how, to be honest, in the industry, that strength is kind of getting on the back burner, man. Like that strength is a problem. Like, I don't know about that, you know? So that's kind of the next two we're going to lead into, which I know we'll do naturally, but the box squat. Okay.
Yeah.
When did you start using it as a, cause you don't see, at least I don't think it's a very popular choice for sports performance training across the board. Now, I'm not saying some coaches don't do it excellently, because there's a lot of coaches out there that do really well, a good job doing it.
Sure, right.
But when did you decide that you wanted to use it? And let's talk about the biomechanics of the box squat, how to execute it correctly, why it can be an advantage. And I'll share my experience that I've had in the last 6 months. Why, like, literally pick your brain to say, hey, I want to run this. What do you think? And, hey, do it. Yeah. And we can talk about how it can be such a, it can be an advantageous lift for many different reasons. So let's break it down, talk about why it can be advantageous and how to execute it.
So biggest thing too, and again, you and I have talked about this before, right? But when you look at it, and let's say we're coming back with either a group of freshmen or you're in a new environment and you've never seen anyone train before. You have no idea what the previous staff had done, what the movement quality looks like. You just don't know because you've never seen it before.
Right.
So take a barbell out of the equation. Let's just say we're going to start with a goblet box squat. Goblet's easy to load, right? But what you get with the box squat, if nothing else, you have an opportunity to implement the squat the way that you and your and the staff you're a part of want to implement it. And if that's something where you want to go, hey, we're going to go with a really wide base, and we're going to kind of we're going to sit back and we're going to get a, you know, get almost a positive shin angle or negative shin angle, excuse me, you know, like Louie and all the guys at Westside coach it, then fine. That's all fine and good. If you're, hey, like we're more of an Olympic based program and we're going to bring the feet in a little bit more and we're going to do more of a narrow based squat, like, hey, that's fine. But what the box gives you an opportunity to do early on is to get to the end range of that motion in the hole. And that gives you the chance as a coach to fix knee position, torso position, pressure in the feet, where the head's at, how the upper back is. That gives you a chance to see the bottom part of the squat with when you utilize a box squat. Okay, here's where we're really good at as a group. Here's where we're not so good at. Here are some cues we can give while we're in the bottom of the squat. And it's not a dangerous position, right? When it's loaded light and you're just working on movement, trying to get this thing implemented the way you want it done, how you want a squat to be seen in your weight room, right? It's an incredibly effective tool. And let's say you've got some guys that aren't squatting very well and movement's not there. Okay, cool. That gives you a chance. You can use the box to clean things up, right? Because if you don't give the team, the athletes you're with, if you don't give them a reference point, it's going to be really, really, really difficult, to clean several things up that you see wrong within a squat, whether it's back, front, goblet, whatever the case is, right? So biggest thing, if you don't take anything else away from this, and people are like, hey, I don't want to use a box squat. It's not a, you know, not a main movement for me and what I do. That's totally fine. But you can use that as a tool to give new athletes that are coming into your program, or if you're in a new environment, that gives them a reference point. Here's the depth we're going to. Here's the position we want to achieve. Here's how we will squat in this program, right? And that gives you a chance to work on that real time in the bottom of the end range of motion. Fix things and get things the way you want it. So now whenever you pull the box away, hey, cool, replicate that, right? But just know you don't have a box to sit to, and watch the positions clean up. Watch the knee positions clean up. Watch the torso angles clean up. Watch the head position. It can fix a lot of things. And then once you know that, if you want to use that as a main lift, by all means, go for it. I think you get a lot of bang out of your buck. You know what I mean? Especially you look at the sport of football, right? Cause that's one that I work with. But when you look at, you know, the start of a play, right, you've got people, whether you're a line, you're on, you know, on the O&D line, you get your hand in the dirt, you know, if you're out wet, you're wide on the edge, you know, you're in a, you know, in a split stance, right. You're going to run a route, you know, linebackers, DBs, same deal, right. Everyone's is starting in a position where some muscles are relaxed, some muscles are contracted, right. And we're in a static position. As soon as the ball snapped, boom, you got to flex hard to get off the line and get in front and get across and get in front of the guy or get into the guy in front of you, right? Or if you're running a route, boom, you're trying to get out of your stance as fast as possible. The box squat can kind of replicate a similar environment and it can teach that type of movement. Yeah. And I think that's one of some of the most low hanging fruit you can get within that movement when we talk about, okay, something besides cleaning up a squat pattern.
So let's stop there and talk about cleaning up the squat pattern, because that's probably where a lot of people in my audience need solutions. And you just hit the nail on the head, and we'll get to the main in a minute, like that second half. I think it's a great tool, because what you do is whenever you get to the bottom of that squat and you can sit on a box, you immediately take away the hardest part of the lift and take away the stability requisite, and you can literally press pause in real time and you can go, hey, look, feel foot position, knee position, leverages, where everything's happening. Now hold that, or get to the box and then come off an inch and hold, right? Yeah. That's a solution. You can feel, you can have people when they start coming off the box to feel what the transition, are their hips flying back, right? Are things disconnected? It's an easy way to dissect it and build skill squatting rather than just throwing a bar on their back or even just giving them a dumbbell and saying, we're going to squat. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a big deal. Right. And you did it with college athletes. Who's to say that we can't do this? We don't need to do this with high school athletes. That's insane.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And that's one of the things too, man. When you look at the box squat, it's, if you try to figure out where you want to put this in your system, your program, whatever you want to call it. And this is just my opinion. I'm sure there are other coaches that do it differently and still have a lot of success. But I think if you start with it, that's a really good place to start. That's not something you progress to doing with a box. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah, you know, like you said, you can press pause, you can dissect it, and you can shift and kind of fix things, right? Feel it, see it, right? You can fix a lot of stuff. Okay, cool. Boom. You've fixed what you need to fix. You've gained the position you want to gain out of the squat. Now pull that box away. Just know you're not gonna have a box to sit on. We're not gonna pause. Or if you want to pause in the bottom to reinforce it, great. That's totally fine.
Right.
But at the end of the day, man, that is a tool. That is a tool, because when you look at, you know, again, I'll always reference football, right? Mm-hmm. But when you look at what quads we're trying to develop, right, within the weight room, within the field, whatever, especially in the weight room, you're not going to take a rack and a bar and some plates and, you know, put it on the 50-yard line on game day, and like whoever's going to bench squat and clean or bench squat dead the most is going to win the ball game. We're just going to play for the fun of it. It doesn't work like that. Right. Mm-hmm. So understand that whatever tools you have available to you, use them as best as you can. I think with the box squat, that's a tool that bears a lot of low hanging fruit. That really surprises me that not more coaches and places take advantage of it.
One argument I hear about the box squat is that, one, like, you're not playing in you, a lot of times if you do, like, we're talking box squat for a main primary lift here. So a max effort or dynamic effort lift, primary lift, we're trying to get a physical adaptation out of it. We're not necessarily teaching as much skill anymore.
Right.
What you hear an argument that, you know, if you do it right, you're really sitting hips back. You have that shin angle we talked about, and people will argue like, okay, we're not in a shin angle where we're going to play a lot, right? We're producing force in an angle or in a shape where, okay, we're not going to play. All right. We're also not, for injury mitigation purposes, we're not closing the knee joint, which is when, and I'm coming full circle here, because we've had this conversation 100 times about how you can have two of these parties of, like, you know, high bar, knee over toe, close the knee, or you can have low bar box squat or just low bar squat, you know, getting around 90. The kinematics and stuff are different, but why is it not a wrong idea to box squat, even though that those specific shapes, unlike maybe a front squat or a vertical torso squat may get into, why is the box squat still advantageous for athletes on the field?
So biggest thing, and again, I got a couple of thoughts on this. I'll try to remember all of them. We're going against a lot, but biggest thing, I think you look at health, right? I think you look at health of the athlete, because the end of the day, like I said just a minute ago, they're not strength athletes, but we do play a lot of sports are going to be strength and power based. Right. And so if we're in a weight room and if we have a way to still push the envelope in the direction we want it to go from a strength standpoint, while keeping the team, the athletes we're with, safe and healthy and feeling good and feeling confident, why would you not use it? So when you look at a box squat, if you sit on it properly, right, instead of not just come down and just banging it like you see right. some people do, right? You look at pressure taken off the lower back, the hips, the knees, right? And typically when we get, you know, deep off in a competitive season, what starts to get achy first? Hips, knees, groins, right? So if we have a way where we can still load the spine, we can still squat, and we can take pressure off those areas of the body that are that have a lot of demand placed on them, perfect. Why wouldn't you? And so, you can do that for both max and dynamic effort.
Talk to me about, because I think that the normal coach will look at you and go, what do you mean a box squat's going to take pressure off the hips, the knees, the groin, the back? Like when you say, yeah. if you do it right, because like a lot of people will say, because you have the forward angle, the shear force on the lumbar spine, you know, the way you're squatting is actually disadvantageous to everything you're claiming. So when you say that, clarify what you mean of how it can take tension off the body.
So the biggest thing, right, whenever you look at someone just doing a regular squat, right, they're in the bottom of the hole, what's supporting the load? Well, the body's supporting the load, right? Well, you put a box under there and you teach someone actually how to sit to it. Well, now that load gets dispersed, right? You now throughout the box, or however big, if it's a small box, a big one, whatever the case is, you've got something that's going to assist you in the bottom that's taking load right off the athlete. That's the biggest thing. Now when you flex and come off hard, yeah, now that's back on the athlete to go ahead. Yeah, now you're in control of that.
Right.
Right. But that just gives you an opportunity, let this load kind of get dispersed and spread evenly, so you're not taking that brunt, especially in season when you're at the most disadvantaged portion of a squat is when you're in the hole.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It does. Yes. And I knew the answer to this question because we've had hours of conversation on it, but yeah. I wanted you to say it because I want everybody to understand like the most disadvantaged part. That's the reason why we just talked about using the box as a teaching tool, because you can't teach when you're in survival mode, right? Yeah. I literally taught an intern this morning about we're doing clean high pulls, and the load was a little heavy. And I said, hey, man, if there was one thing you could fix right now on that to make this better, what would you do? And he was like, the whole intern deer in headlights. And I said, lighten the load. Because
yeah.
how can you build skill if you're in survival mode, get it up or die, it's too heavy, yeah. right? Not saying that heavy's bad, but in order to build skill, so like for the box squat, getting to the most disadvantageous position, but then giving them some stability mm-hmm. and feeling it. That's why I'm also a big fan. Like if you want to teach the high bar squat or the front squat, like do it hand assisted first and feel what it means to close the knee. Do a rack crawl that I use as a skill building drill. That's a big deal. And if you learn how to sit on it correctly, sequence right, have a really rigid core, understand how to, cause all right, you know what? Screw this, Lucas. We're going to talk straight top to bottom on how to squat properly. Let's talk about things that people don't want to talk about, like packing your neck, hand placement,
yeah.
what your feet should be doing. All, like what position of your core and how you should squat. Because in high school, man, you know what you hear? Flat heels, sit back, eyes up.
Yeah.
That's all I hear. You know, like we've got to be better coaches. So let's throw some high school coaches some bones here and let's talk about how to coach the squat.
So biggest thing, like, and again, I may say a couple of things that everyone's like, okay, like, you know, duh, you should know how to do that, right? But
right.
I think the biggest thing when you look at a squat, obviously bar position, right? And I'm not talking about bar position or back and tight position in the rack, so you can actually get somewhat of a quarter squat and take it two steps out smooth.
Can't take that for granted, though. Like, yeah, that's important. How many high school kids you see getting on their tippy toes trying to get the bar off the rack, man?
We're doing one thing I've seen too has been, you know, guys grab bar and dip under and boom, just right up. It's like, well, whole, like, slow your roll, man. Like, you got to get that thing set up first. So biggest thing, make sure that bar is in a spot where we can safely get a quarter squat. It's usually going to be about that low to mid chest height. You know, make sure that is done, is taken care of. Biggest thing we talk about head position and hand position, right?
Yeah.
And again, there's all sorts of different schools of thought on this. And I'm not saying that, you know, you got to go super wide, you got super narrow. I think the biggest thing is get in a position where you're wide enough to where you can still, you know, have a little room to move.
Yeah.
Almost like you're doing like a white, like just a regular, you know, lat pull down, like a wide grip pull down. Mm-hmm. Right. But because what I've seen, and this is just my experience, is that sure. whenever we get the hands in so tight, and let's say we're squatting in a flat shoe, we don't have the heel shoe to free the ankle up and let the knee travel a little bit, and we keep warming up right torso. What's going to happen is we're going to start seeing everyone kind of get pitched forward in the bottom. And now all of a sudden that squat turns into a good morning because we are so tight with our grip and we are so locked in through the mid back that we can't allow for some degrees of freedom to move. And so my biggest thing is go as wide as you can while being able to maintain a tight, close grip, while being pulled down the barbell to where, hey, we're in a stable position where we're in close enough where we can maintain tightness through the lats, the upper back, scaps, all that jazz, right? But we're not so wide to where we're getting so far out to where now we have zero base of support, right, for the bar. Because when you look at, and that'll kind of tie into the next part, you look at head position, you and I have talked about this a lot, right? And again, when I talk about it a little bit, when we talk about the box squat, you can look at head position. Oh my God, like what's the deal with that? What's the deal with the head position? Well, think about it. If you see someone, you're moving, you know, big time weight. And again, I know there are going to be any lifters that compete in powerlifting that will have the chin down a little bit. And that's all fine and good. That is their sport. They have found a way that works best for them. I'm not saying that's a bad deal. But when we're in the weight room, we have to keep in mind with these teams, like here at Boise State, our guys are elite at football. They're elite football players.
Right.
They did not come here to lift weights and play football on the side. That's not what their scholarship is for. So when you look at it, when we're supporting the biggest load that we can support, right, whether it's a 315, it's a 500, you're a dude that's squatting 600 pounds in here. Biggest thing that I've seen whenever we've seen in this environment, in this setting, in the college setting, is that when the eyes are down, the chin is tucked a little bit, and you're in what's called a neutral, you know, most people will deem a neutral position, the first thing to come out of a squat, hips are going to rise. And now we have gotten almost in a good morning position. You want to talk about shearing forces on the lower back as opposed to a box squat? What's going to be worse?
Yeah.
And now we're getting in really, really bad positions. We're ingraining bad patterns, bad mechanics, and bad habits. So when you look at the head, and this has been the best spot cue I've ever had. And it was for my man, Brandon Smilly. Shout out, Brandon. Give you a shout every time I do one of these things. he's been a big help to me, but one of the biggest things is when I'm teaching the squat, I'm coaching the squat, I'll go, once we get hand position, rack height, all that, biggest thing is position on the back and then head position.
Okay.
Get that bar dug in. And again, I don't really necessarily try to differentiate between high bar, low bar. I try to teach just one straight position right across the rear delt. Mm-hmm. You'll feel when you get in that little bit of that groove, you'll feel it, right? Just under the trap right above the rear delt. But when you get in, take your head and don't cock your chin up and turn into a Pez dispenser. But pull your head back. Try to pinch the bar between your traps and the bottom of the back of your head.
Okay.
And tuck your chin to your throat. And the amount of tension you get in the upper back is crazy. Why is that important? When you look at where the bar is sitting, it's on your upper back. Why would you not want to have the max amount of tension and tightness on that part of the body?
Yeah.
Because if you don't have that, your torso is going to be all over the place. And it's going to be a bad deal for everyone.
Yeah.
So biggest thing, head and eyes up slightly. I'm not saying look at the sky, but up a little bit. But pack your head back into the barbell and try to squeeze that bar between the traps and the bottom of your head. And watch the torso position clean up. And now we're in a little more of an upright torso where the hips and shoulders can move up together and stay stacked. Now all of a sudden, you're coming out of the hole. You're not getting pitched forward. Now we can use those quads as best we can. Hamstrings are still taking it. Hips and glutes are still involved. You're still getting a lot of good work out of the adductors. So it's like, you know, why would you want to box yourself into just being, oh, we have to get wide and just use the posterior side?
Yeah.
Or we have to get narrow and just rely solely on the quads and the VMO, all that jazz, right? Because those are two different schools of thought. Why not find a way where you can take advantage of all muscles, all levers?
Yeah.
Why not find a way where you can accomplish all that? And now you want to talk about the squat being, you know, one of the movements you're getting the most bang for your buck. Now you truly are getting the most bang for your buck.
Right.
Does that kind of make a little sense? Or?
It's a big deal. And I want you guys to listen. Luke just went, I don't know, we went 3 minutes, 4 minutes. And did we say anything about actually starting the squat? No. We didn't even get into that part yet. We talked about getting under the bar, where you place the bar, and unracking it. Guys, the setup for everything you do is going to set you up for success or set you up for failure. You guys need to understand that. Like, it's so important. You know, I had a coach in high school that he was a football coach, but I take this with me is the three A's is alignment, assignment, adjustment. And as far as being a strength coach, number one, alignment is important. And if you look at football, like I heard somebody say the other day, like Nick Saban says at Alabama, if you consistently line up 1 yard off of leverage on defense, I don't play you. Like, it doesn't work, right? We have to line up correctly. We have to set up on the bar correctly. We have to do all these things. And before we even execute the movement, teach the setup over and over. You got young kids, do it over, over and over and over. Like, I would highly recommend if you have the time, and in high school you do, is get your kids to get under the bar correctly. Get the bar off the rack correctly. Stand there with it and then rack it and do that all the time. What do you think on that?
Just a sec.
Yeah, dude, you're all good.
No, I think that's huge, man. Like, so as far as your drill and the setup, I think that's massive, because if you don't have the setup from the jump, then if it's not right, whether you're, you know, you tell your guys, hey, you know, sit back a little bit more, open up, or it's, hey, we're going to start at the knees, whether it's a front squat, back squat, doesn't matter. If that start is not dialed in and it's not correct, the rest of the movement is going to be off. I'm sorry. And then again, we talk about you in the weight room. It's athlete health and safety.
Yeah.
That's the number one priority. Keeping these guys safe, keeping them healthy.
Yeah.
And regardless if it's football, if it's baseball, basketball, whatever sport you work with, that is paramount.
Yeah.
Right. And so why would you not teach, whether it's a squat, a bench, a clean, whatever the case is, a pull, why would you not teach it as effectively as you possibly could to make sure that you can maximize the movement, maximize what's going on, but also keep them safe and healthy at the same time?
No doubt. That's big time, man. You know, and at the end of the day, you know, especially at least in this high school realm and listening to coaches talk and what's swirling on social media, is I feel like strength as a quality is getting lost. And everybody wants to try to answer the question of when are we strong enough, right? My question is, how the crap do you know? Are you strong in the first place? Like, you're talking about dudes, you're over here squatting 903 at freaking the gym you went to. Now, I understand it's a different sport. We get that. Like, we know we're not trying to make them into elite lifters, trying to make them into elite football players. But what does strength do for us? All right, we just talked about health and safety, robustness, resilience.
Yep.
Why is strength so important for that? Because to me, I think it's paramount.
And again, it's so funny when we talk about this, right? I think the what was the sign that was down at Mississippi State that Coach Court had hung up there, and it was still there when Savage was there. It was your best ability is your availability.
Yes,
I understand that. I think your durability is your best ability, but being durable and being durable means you're probably going to be available. And if you're available, you can go contribute. You can play. So when you talk about what strength does, right? Strength sets the base. When you look at, tendon health, muscle health, bone health, whatever the case is, right? This the overall health of the athlete or the team that you're with. A robust level base of strength can give you the best opportunity to keep your guy, the guys on the field that you need to have on the field in order to go win games on Saturday.
Yeah.
And kind of like, and again, the question when I talk about this, like, biggest thing too is that, you know, when you look at, like on the field, right? When you sprint, you jump, you throw. I mean, shooting all rate of force development stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Well, when you look at rate of force development, you kind of look at the dynamic effort method in the weight room, right? It's essentially the way that I explain it and the way that makes the most sense to me, I think, with the teams that I've been with. It's okay, cool. Like, we've taken care of the max effort work on the front end of the week or whatever the case is. Now we've taken a chance, of opportunity, we've built that strength. But just being super strong for a, you know, multiplayer change direction field sport does you no good if you can't display that strength quicker than the person across from you.
Right.
And so that's where the dynamic effort method comes in, right? Take your strength that you have and learn to display it as fast as possible. Well, when you look at running, jumping, throwing, right, it's all force in the ground. How quickly can you develop force? Well, if you don't have a base level of strength to begin with, doing DE work or whatnot is not gonna and relying solely on field work, you know, can you get somewhere? For sure. But are you going to be able to maximize it? Probably not. Because, and again, this goes back to my experience working track and field the last couple of schools, you know, that I've been with is, you know, because you'll have two sides of thought. You'll have one side where it's like the weight room is all you need to do. That's it. And the field work is something you kind of have to do. Well, I don't know if you're going to find another coach that's as big of a fan of strength as I am in this field. But if that were the case, then you'd see every 1,000-pound squatter be able to run 21, 22, 23 miles an hour. Right. And that's not the case. It's not the case. That's not their sport. They don't train for it. On the flip side, and again, this is, again, my experience with working track. Jake, can you shut that, please?
Yeah.
Appreciate you, man. Thank you. My experience working track and field over the years is that when, you know, you got everyone's like, well, all you need to do is sprint, sprint, sprint. That is all you have to do. Well, my question would be, and again, it's not to be, you know, arrogant or, try to be, you know, a jerk. My question would be, if that's all you needed to do, then why, as track and field freshmen, why do we see so many freshmen coming in from high school into college? Hamstrings, low backs, hips, quads, feet, calves. Okay, why do we see so many injuries?
Yeah.
And my response would be, because there's not been that period of time to physically develop within the weight room and work certain positions, work through certain range of motions and bolster the body up to be able to withstand the demands of going out and running and sprinting and throwing and jumping. Because when you look at it, yeah. like we tell our guys here, like, if you look at sprinting, right? And again, the weight room is where is my niche. I get it. But there's not a single person that at least I know of that can squat 5 times body weight for on one leg. We don't need dudes that can squat 1,000 pounds single leg. Like,
no,
you know what I mean? So when you go out and sprint and you're getting, 5 times body weight ground reaction force when you sprint, I mean, that's the most potent stimulus you can get. And I'm a big, big believer in the weight room, but even I understand that.
Yeah.
Right. So why is strength important? So when you look at, especially in the college realm, right. And when in high school too, I mean, when I coached high school ball, we had some kids now that were pretty athletic, but when you look at what sprinting and maxfully and jumping maxfully and throwing, whether you're throwing med balls or your track and field, you're throwing shot and discus and hammer, mm-hmm. whatever the case is. I mean, those are maximal effort attempts. And a lot of times when you sprint in a sport like football, you're doing that on one leg. Don't you think that type of stimulus and that exposure is going to cause some damage and is going to cause, some fatigue and is going to stress the athletes out, right? That's a lot, man. So if we have a way where we can build a robust level base of strength, we can essentially give these kids an opportunity to do those type of activities, sprint, jump, throw, and expose themselves to those type of efforts and be able to do that over the course of a long time. So you're trying to increase the longevity of, their ability to do those, to be exposed to those efforts.
Right.
And that's the deal, man. If we don't have a robust level base of strength, then it's like, at some point the breaking point is going to hit a lot quicker than someone who has spent plenty of time in the weight room developing. And another question I get, and I'm sure we were about to get this too, is that, the big question is, how do you quantify that? How do you tack a metric onto what we're doing from a strength standpoint? How do you know when strong is strong enough?
Yeah.
And this is something I took from Coach Decker, and I'm sure a lot of the coaches out there that use this, but we would do a strength to body weight ratio. And so we would take, in that system, we would look in the system that I like. It's, you take a bench, a squat, and a clean. You take all three of your best training maxes or your best, 1RMs to date, whatever you're going off of. Add those together, you get a big three total. Divide by the body weight of the athlete, and boom, there you go. You should get anywhere between a 4.0 to a 6.0. And, how effective is it? How reliable is it? If there's a better way out there, like, I would love to see it. And that's not me being, I'm challenging someone to find a better way. I would generally love to see it, because I think there's a lot of low hanging fruit there. And again, this is just, one of the schools I was at, I won't say which one, but out of, I think it was a group of 85 guys. And the numbers might get kind of skewed a little bit off the top of my head. But from what I remember, when I looked at strength to body weight ratio across the board, we looked at 85 guys, right? 85 athletes. 4.50 or greater seemed to be the sweet spot. 4.5 to greater was the one metric where we started to see injuries drop off.
Okay.
And then whenever there were rates of injury, they were like 2 weeks or less, boom, you're back on the field, back into practice.
Something minor.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Nothing crazy. So we look at a group of 85 and we looked at, are they a starter or are they on the two, or at least on the depth chart on the two way? Yes or no. Okay, cool. And then we looked at what was their injury status for the last two seasons. And then what were, we had a couple other metrics we looked at, but my big thing, I wanted to see what did the strength to body weight ratio tell us? Is it a legitimate metric to look at? And in my opinion, it is, where I'm still doing some stuff with it. But when we looked at it, we looked at those 85 guys. Out of the 27 that had a 4.50 or greater, only 7 sustained injury.
Wow.
How about that? It was 2 weeks or less. Now, when you look at the rest of them, it was, bless you, it was a 4.49 or less on the strength to body weight ratio. The rate of injury increased substantially. 37 out of those 80 out of that group.
Wow.
Had a significant injury that held them out for 2 weeks or greater. And so when I'm, and again, that could be through a fall period, a spring camp, whatever the case is. But when you're looking at that, and again, you can't draw conclusions.
Yeah.
But you can sure as heck see some patterns.
Right.
You can see some patterns.
That's a big deal right there in itself, is how you look at things.
Absolutely. And so when I'm kind of looking at this, And I was just kind of doing just for, because I was curious. I was doing them just for my own entertainment, because I'm thinking I've got this thought process that, you know, strength is important, but you can go around and say, well, this is important, that's important. But if you don't have a way to tack a metric and show, like, hey, this is important, here's how we can improve this, here's what this tells us. Well, it's pretty hard, because it just becomes opinion at that point. But yeah. When I looked at the strength to body weight ratios and what it was telling me, like, oh, there are some trends here. This is really interesting. What does this tell us? And now it's going to take probably the next, you know, several years to be able to really definitively say, hey, if we're able to meet this standard, boom, then your chance of having a significant injury drops by X amount, whatever the case is. I'm not there yet with it.
Sure.
But over the last, you know, several years, I've done this and looked at these metrics, at least as far as strength is concerned. That's been something that's really jumped out at me. And again, we talk about if you've got, you know, a roster loaded with 5-stars, but they're all hurt in the training room on the side, that does you no good.
Yeah.
It does you no good.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah. So when you look at why strength's important, to me, that's why. It gives you a chance to express and display all the other athletic qualities that are needed in, say, a sport like football. But also too, from a health and safety aspect, it gets the body ready, right, for what the demands are going to be throughout a season. And the seasons are long, man. You know it. I know it. The seasons are long. And if we can build a robust level of strength and have a greater strength reserve, we're probably going to have better, stronger bodies towards the end of the season as opposed to a team that doesn't. And so when you ask me why strength's important to me, that's why.
And you got to have your best guys on the field when it matters most. You know, like, if you don't have your guys at the end, man, it's hard. Just like us last year, we were missing our best. I told you this, you know, we had a hamstring tweaks with our smartest player and our best player, and they both played defense. And who knows if the outcome of the game would have changed if both of them would have been on the field, but at the high school level, being them, I think it would have made a difference. I want to touch on how important it was that you talked about. Okay. Every coach listened to Luke's process when he did this. I think strength's important. I'm not just going to scream it to the rooftops without trying to pursue and prove it. So I'm going to run, you know, things that you've seen and coaches you've experienced with. I know you don't take credit for all that. Like, you just decided, hey, I'm going to do this, and we're going to run it, and we're just going to see what happens. And a lot of times we get caught up in cognitive bias, right, or cognitive dissonance, where we try to see what we want to see rather than looking at it from, okay, I might do this and get an answer I don't necessarily like and may prove myself wrong, right? For example, I'll give one example for me. Like, I thought, okay, if we don't have to front squat, but we can Zercher squat because the skill requisite's lower, it's easier to keep a torso taller. Like, we can stress the legs a lot more if we Zercher squat. So we did it for a long time in our off season. Had a lot of conversations with some really good coaches, including Alan Bishop, because he ran it too. He said, yeah, I'm going to do it with you. And I was like, holy crap. I went, okay. And he said, all right, let's talk about it in 6 weeks. So we did. And he said, what are your conclusions? And we agreed. We both said the same thing. We said, I don't think you can load the legs enough because of how much it cooks the back and the core. But what it did for me was realize it taught my athletes how to create rigidity and increased a lot of core trunk strength and rigidity that translated to all other parts of training. That's just an example of trying to look at something and find what it's really saying versus what the data, what you want it to say. So you said, this is going to take years, right? Mm-hmm. It's going to take a long time, but the fact that strength is so important, because guys, strength isn't important to show that you can hit a number. It's important because it's going to allow us to be more robust on the field and play for more snaps, for more games, and win, and have our best guys on the field to win. And at the end of the day, like, if you're on the bench, you can't help us win, man. It's really hard to help us win if you're on the bench, you know, and that's how you pitch it to your players, is like, you don't, now that's another thing with strength, is how do you measure it? Now, don't get it twisted. Now, there's no need for you to say, to try to tweak or leverage the lift to say you got strong, like for example, shortening a range of motion of a squat, so your squat numbers appear to be higher. You're pitching yourself a false narrative, right? That's not necessarily the strength we're talking about. We're trying to develop true force production capabilities, and we're not just talking about the squat. We're talking about overall, period. Can you produce force, right? And then in turn, you get on the field and be able to do that. I talked to, you know, the episode before this, I talked to Coach Tony Villani that's down in Florida. And it's funny, he made this, he had this comment about Mark Ingram, about how, you know, he kind of had a tough year last year of staying healthy. you know, and I mean, dude, he's a running back in the 11th year of the NFL. Come on, man. Yep. Like, dude, that's already stupid impressive because, you know, running backs get beat to death in the NFL. But he talked about how all this, the change of direction and the force, he's already strong. Like he's already strong one, but he's already really good at changing direction because he's so strong and because of all the forces and stuff he has to withstand. He goes, okay, our field work is only going to be so much. Now you need to get in the weight room and get healthy. And I was like, get in the weight room and get healthy? What do you mean? He's like, you need to do everything possible to work on stability, strength, you know, positioning and deceleration, all the things that are going to give you a higher ceiling of robustness. So when you get on the field, you can play more snaps and make more money, man. And I was like, holy cow. Like, that's it. And I want every coach to hear that. And I know, Luke, you're going to say it like exactly what you just said. Like, that's what makes strength so important, is that don't just chase strength for the sake of numbers. Chase strength so your kids get a chance to play this game longer than not. Cause like, we have too many kids getting hurt, man. It's insane. Like, I've had some injuries here these past week. Dude, I had the freakiest thing in the world happen to me in the weight room this week, Luke. We ain't talked about this. In the warm-up, so this is where we've got to be better overall as practitioners across the board, sports meds, strength and conditioning, sports performance, ATs, everybody. I had a ninth grader, Luke. We're doing pogo jumps in the warm-up. Breaks his tibia. In the warm-up, dude, I am not kidding. I heard it out loud. It freaked me out. No, the kid is so tough. He was like, yeah, that hurt a little bit. Might want to take me over here. I was like, and his leg swole up like somebody put an inner tube on his leg.
Oh, my goodness.
Scared. One, I thought he ruptured his patella tendon. I was like, I'm freaking out. I'm thinking, what did I do wrong? We're just warming up. We're not even doing anything max effort. We're doing extensive low-level pogos just to get us going. And you track back, and without disclosing too much info, you know, for privacy purposes.
Yeah.
Like, he had a prior patellar tendon surgery that maybe didn't go as well. The therapy didn't go as well. He was really young. And then he grew really fast into this big, strong, like one of the strongest ninth graders I've seen. And that the doctor said after this past surgery, he's like, I can tell that there was a stress fracture there, that pogo was just the straw that broke the camel's back.
Right.
You know, and I'm like, you know, that's just got my wheels turning on our overall approach to resiliency and durability. You know, and that I know that injuries can't be prevented, but what are we doing to help mitigate that? And I 100% believe that strength and movement options, like quality of movement and strength, is step one. And especially in high school, man, like, I hate to say this, but like, I don't understand. This is just my opinion. How you can justify doing something like a tsunami bar on a high school kid when the strength requisite's not there. You know, I'm not going to hate on the tsunami bar for what it can be,
right?
Because it's not personal. But to me, like, doing an overloaded, you know, rate of force development without a strength base, you just talked about it, it could be problematic.
It can. I think one of the biggest things too, especially when you look at, you know, I go back on my time as a high school coach, you know, and kind of things I would have done different. But even here, I mean, you look at a lot of the freshmen that come in, it's, you know, some of them have lifted, some haven't. You know, and they've just been able to rely on just on God-given ability, which, hey, like, you know, cool. It's probably why you're here in the first place. You know, I mean, let's not get it twisted. You know, but at the end of the day, I think as you as a coach, if you're able to expose the kids that you're with, the athletes you're with, to a lot of different stimuli within reason, within industry norms, I think that does a much better job of building the base instead of just sticking with, oh, we're just going to bench squat clean or bench squat deadlift. And that is it. Because after a while, you and I know this, you know, with as much time as we spent training, the barbell can be very unforgiving.
Yeah.
You know, at some point. And so if you have a way where you can rotate, if you've got, you know, hey, we're going to rotate between a back squat, a front squat, and a goblet squat. And then maybe, boom, we're going to rely on a trap bar as our main lower on, like, you know, shoot, week four or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, then that's fine. If you have a way, or if you want to roll waves of two, waves of three, or whatever. But if you have a way to expose your kids to as much as you possibly can, again, like I said, within reason, you know, then why would you not do it? And again, I know, like, you know, everyone's like, you know, talking about contact system and West Side and like powerlifting and all that. And you know, it's not just, hey, we're going to get super wide and box squat with negative shin angles and we're just going to roll with that. Right. It's, you know, we understand that the game is the game of football. And again, a lot of you look at sport, right? Sport's unpredictable. So why would you just box yourself as a coach into being just solely, I'm just conjugate, that's it.
Yeah.
Or I'm just 5-3-1, I'm just triphasic, right? Why would you not find things that you like from certain systems and make it your own, yeah, right? And start to piece together something that you feel effective, or that you feel is effective, you feel strongly about, that is put in place for the best interest of the group you're working with. And again, that boils down not only, you know, what methodology you go with, but as far as an exercise selection as well. I mean, it's when you look at, in sport, is the knee going to go over the toe? Absolutely. For sure. Is it going to happen on one leg? For sure. You know, and some people might be like, oh, you know, he's just going to have his guys, you know, squat wide to a box. Yeah, we'll get out in some wider base because sport is played in a wider base. I mean, let's not get it twisted, but at the same time, yeah, cool, man, bring it in. Let's do some narrow base stuff. Let's tighten the stance a little bit. Let's get on one leg. Let's elevate the rear foot. Let's elevate the front foot. Let's do some lunging. Let's do some 3D lunging. Let's move in space.
Yeah,
right. Let's find, you know, different patterns and different movements that you're going to be exposed to on the field. Let's make sure we can achieve those here first, and then, you know, effectively and appropriately go ahead and load it. Like, it's not rocket science. And so, you know, that's one of those things, like, you know, if you get boxed, don't box yourself into being just, you know, we have to use these implements, we have to follow this system. Like, no, man, like find what you feel is effective and what's going to prepare the groups you're with as best you can and roll with it, and pick things that you can, you know, exercises and deals that you can teach and you can communicate effectively, so the message is received and things get executed at an incredibly high level.
Yeah.
It's not difficult.
I 100% agree. And I think that we just have a lack of critical thinkers in our field, man. I really do. Like, it, in order to do what you just said, which is take bits and pieces based off what you need and how you break down the analysis of what your guys need and what your girls need or whatever, is equipping yourself with tools and then having the skill to critically think. Like, sure, sit and think and come up with a solution, not rely on a copy and paste of what somebody else has done. And rolling into our last segment here, Luke, and I know that this is an important conversation that I feel like we all need to have. And how can we overall, in the profession of strength and conditioning, how can we be more productive on pushing our field forward in our behavior? Because I've heard it. I'm the world's worst, man. If you would have met me 2 years ago on Twitter, you said, dude, this dude's a freaking idiot. Like, you're trashing people. I'm thankful that I've had people that truly care about me check me. You know, I've had people that care about me check me, and I think that's important. And overall, how can our behavior improve our field rather than tear down from it?
All right. I knew this one was coming. And so I try to find a way where, you know, politely and professionally kind of articulate this to where it feeds into a good answer. But I think the biggest thing, again, I'm big on the socials, man. I'm big on Instagram. I'm on Twitter more so now since I've gotten to Boise.
Broncos. Wow. Love it.
Yeah. Hey man, easiest Twitter game in the world. Easiest one, but very effective. No, but I think the biggest thing is, so your friend, you and I have talked about this before, right? When you go on like Instagram or Twitter, especially Twitter, and you make a comment, and it's pretty like, you know, you're going after someone and, you know, it's like, you know, bashing some dude. Well, this is bad. This is stupid. You know, he didn't know what he's talking about. And it's like, you know, what if your administration sees this? What if the people that hired you see this? Would you be like, oh yeah, if admin sees this, cool, they'll still keep me employed and they'll look at me, you know, as a true professional. I can tell you that answer is no.
Yeah.
At least if it's me and I'm sitting at that spot and I've got someone on my staff, when I become a head guy at some point, and I've got coaches on my staff that are going out and lashing out at other, you know, strength and conditioning professionals, on social medias, that is fired quick, fast, and in a hurry.
Yeah.
I will not tolerate it, because not only have you painted a bad picture of yourself, you've painted a bad picture of the field as a whole to people that have no idea of what we do.
Yeah.
You've painted a bad picture to the coaching staff you're on, to the people that have hired you, and most importantly, to the kids you have coached and to your family. And if that's how you make your money and that's how you keep a roof over your head and keep clothes on backs and keep food on the table, it's not worth 140 or 280 characters, however many, I don't know. Because I use a couple and some exclamation points whenever I tweet. That's about it.
Yeah.
But does that, like, hopefully I get across the point, is that we have to do a better job of portraying ourselves as true, as professionals.
Yeah.
And not only the settings where we think, oh, we have to look professional. Right. But again, when you look at Twitter, Instagram, if it's, you know, you get up on a team Snapchat story, Tumblr, like whatever the case, it doesn't matter. Any social media outlet that you're with, that's where more eyes are going to be going towards, right? Because if we go to the CSCCA conference, if you go to the NSCA conference, it's going to be strength and conditioning professionals, yeah, right? It's going to be a small, in the real relative, you know, grand scheme of things, it's going to be a small group. Now you go on Twitter, instead you go on social media, now you're connected with the world.
Yeah.
And what's going to happen if they see, you know, all these strength coaches bickering and arguing over things that really don't matter, to be honest.
Yeah.
Right. If someone began like that, that would be like me coming at someone like, oh, you don't run Kanji, you just do linear. Like, that's so stupid. I don't care.
Yeah.
Because if it's something that you feel is effective and you can communicate and you can plan and organize well, and your kids are healthy, they're strong, they're enjoying the training process, and they trust you as a coach, who to say I am wrong?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or right. Who to say you're wrong? You know what I mean? Like,
no doubt.
Yeah. That's the biggest thing. So, you know, we always talk about, you know, we want to make sure that, you know, we need to, you know, treat each other like professionals. We need to be taken as professionals, and people get up on their soapbox and say, like, which I'm kind of getting up on one now.
Yeah.
It's like, look, man, it's going to start with us. It's going to start with the people there in the field now that have a chance to make an influence, to shine that light and for us to be seen as, hey, we're not just, you know, people that go down in weight rooms and wear sweats all day long and blow a whistle and get all juiced up. No, we are strength and conditioning professionals. And if that means clean up your socials, if that means throwing a suit on when you go to travel, whenever you've got ADs, assistant ADs, boosters, donors, people from the alumni group, and they meet, hey, you know, if I go introduce myself, hey, I'm Lucas White, one of the strength coaches. And they're like, oh, suited up, clean, looking ready to go. This is a business trip. What kind of image is that going to paint?
Right.
For not only you as a coach, but for the field as a whole.
Yeah.
What is that going to do? And I think that we can all agree that would shine, a positive light on a field that really, when you really look at, not a whole lot of people still understand. And so I think that's it. We need to do a better job of portraying ourselves as professionals. And that goes far beyond the conferences. It stems to social media channels. It stems when you're outside of the weight room, when you're traveling, and you're around other people within the community.
Yeah, that's a big deal. I'm glad you mentioned that. That was beautifully said, by the way. I think you articulated that very, very well. And I'm gonna hit another point that just to clarify, because it's important.
Yeah.
Just because you're professional doesn't mean that you still can't build a brand, right?
For sure.
Because look, like, it's the same thing like when we talk about culture or we talk about mental toughness, because I wrote a mental toughness article for Simply Faster. If you want to read it, I poured my soul into that thing because I think it's really good. But like, your brand is not something you just create mm-hmm. on social. It's the culmination of how you live your life and how you treat people. That's sure. your brand, right? Yes. That's your brand, your culture, right? Your discipline. Like, I tell people in your programs, your culture is not a part of your program. It's not a section in the binder that you have for the program. It's not a tab on your Excel file. It's the culmination and the byproduct of every decision you make and every interaction you make with every individual within and outside of the organization. Yep. Right? So yep. Don't act like you can't build a brand, you know, or you can't make a name for yourself. And at the end of the day, if you're only chasing for notoriety, you may get it, and that's all you're going to get. Your legacy is going to be tainted, in my opinion, you know. And but that doesn't mean that, because you can still go about this the right way. I mean, dude, let me, you got plenty of followers on Instagram, right? I mean, yeah. And at the end of the day, if you want to follow me, I want you to do it because you want to be around me as a person.
For sure.
Not some persona that I've made online that I'm not even that person in real life. You know, and it's hard to get caught up in that. I've gotten caught up in it. You know, it's not easy, and everybody's yeah. susceptible to it. I don't care how immune you think you are. If you dive in it too far, if you fly too close to the sun, you might get burned.
Yep.
You might get burned. That's the risk you take. So you got to have people in your alley, in your circle. Lucas is 100% in my circle. I can tell you that. That's willing to tell you things that are honest, check you, have hard conversations behind the scenes to help each other grow. And I want you guys to know that just because that, if you don't agree with something on Twitter or something, this is what I would advise, because this is what I didn't do. Send a DM, get a phone number, call them. Because when you have a phone conversation, it's so much easier to communicate, right? We're already not good communicators anyway. Like, we've got to be better, right? Communication is really tough. So call. And I don't know where this quote came from, but somebody said, like, if you have a problem with me and you have my number, you better call me. If you have a problem with me and you don't have my number, I don't care. Like, it shouldn't matter anyway, because you don't know me well enough, right?
For sure.
It's a really good point. So, Lucas, I appreciate you coming on, man. It's been a great time. We could talk for 3 more hours if we wanted to. I know that for a fact. I know you're busy. I know you guys have a little short time here in the summer where you guys are getting ready to reload, and fall camp's about to be a brutal process. But, man, I can't wait to see you guys kick off on Thursday against UCF on ESPN. You guys check these guys out, man. I'm super excited and want to see them succeed. So, Luke, I appreciate you taking the time to come hang out with me, and it's been an honor to have you, man.
Hey, man, glad we finally had a chance to get this thing done. It awesome conversation. Like I said, we go for 2-3 hours, which we have before. But man, I really appreciate you giving me a platform and giving me the opportunity to jump on. And it was really appreciative. You know, really appreciate that, you know, the fact that we had a chance to cross paths whenever we did, because you've been someone that, you know, you've been in my corner. I've been able to bounce ideas off you. And again, not only are you a good coach, but you're an awesome dude. So
thanks, man.
Again, glad to be surrounded by people like you in the field, man. So again, thanks for the time. I really appreciate it. And hopefully, you know, if you like to circle back around to some, you know, guests for a second time, man, let me know. We'll chop it up again.
No doubt. And then before we go, let everybody know, if they have questions from this interview or want to pick your brain a little more on your process, how can they reach you?
Yeah. So again, big on the socials. Instagram is probably where I'm the most active. It's at strength_coach_white. My Twitter handle is at @SCCoachWhite. Email is LucasWhite61. I'm the 61st Lucas White, what does he say?
That's insane. Lucas, how about that?
I don't know if that is or not. It's just an inside joke.
But yeah.
LucasWhite61@BoiseState.edu. And if any of you guys want to call me, man, my number, call or text, it's 812-305-1086. And, you know, if you want to chop it up, have a conversation, or you're a younger coach in the field, you got some questions, like, however I can help, you know, want to be, make sure I, you know, put all that out there. So I'm, you know, at least a resource, you know, that's available. So don't be afraid to reach out to me if you guys have any questions or just want to chop it up.
Awesome. Good deal, Luke. Well, appreciate you coming on, and we'll catch you guys next week.
Appreciate you, man.